This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Now, it's the Michael K. Show podcast.
Rex, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Now,
thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like you're down, and of course you wanted to go to the Super Bowl, and I don't have to talk you off a ledge, but, I mean, your team played so well yesterday. I mean, in terms of, it didn't make mistakes. I mean, the Vikings are probably beating themselves up today for what they did. You didn't make that glaring mistake or the fumble or anything like that. I almost think that you look at this and say, I got beaten by an otherworldly quarterback. Can you look at it that way?
Well, I certainly feel like I did. There's no question. It's, you know, we came out. I mean, we were flying out of the gate. Our guys were ready to play. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it just, you know, the guy's unbelievable. He really is. And, you know, it's just unfortunate. I know we have a great football team, and I might be the best football team I've ever been around, but it's, you know, the guy got hot, and it just felt like we had, you know, that no matter what we did, it wasn't, you know, we weren't going to be able to stop him. I mean, that's almost the feeling that I had, and, you know, but again, I look forward to that opportunity again to face him, but it's, you know, we're going to have to really look long and hard at you know, what he was able to do against us.
What makes him so great? I mean, is he just smarter than the average bear? Because he doesn't have unbelievable physical talent. What makes him so good that he could do that to the best defense in football?
Well, his accuracy, number one. I mean, he knows where he's going. You're right about his mentality. You know, it took him 7 years before he ever won, you know, got to the, you know, won the Super Bowl and things like that. And that tells you how difficult it really is to win it. But he's, you know, he's smart. It's hard to fool him. And I tell you, when we had the injury happen to Strickland, you got to really give credit to Tom Moore and Howard Mudd and all those guys, the assistants over there, Jim Caldwell, obviously, that they saw an opportunity and they exploited it. I mean, they immediately went to three wides. They knew we'd have probably some matchup issues, and we did. And Peyton took advantage of it. And you know, those guys, the receivers did an outstanding job. You know, those guys are players, and you know, from they're just so in sync with each other. And that's something that hopefully we can be like that. You know, we have, I think, you know, not having Braylon for training camp and all the mini camps and all that kind of hurt in that. You know, that hurt us. But I think now having, you know, getting him back and on the same page and everything else, you know, when they come in together, hopefully we can click like that one day.
One thing that I was worried about throughout your playoff run was that you only had one Darrell Revis. And I was a little concerned about the other guys that cover. Do you think that was manifested yesterday, or was it because of the injury to Strickland?
No, I mean, I, you know, clearly, you know, they were going away from Darrell Revis.
Right.
I mean, that was it. And unfortunately, he's not a twin, because, you know, there's only one Revis. And no matter what we did, it seemed like they were able to take advantage of, you know, some of the matchups and things like that. But again, that's, you know, that's to their credit. It's not trying to slight anybody, any of our players. It's just a credit to them.
Before the game, you decide not to start Lito and you go with Dwight Lowry. What was behind that decision? Just you felt better matchups?
Yeah, absolutely did. You know, Lowry really played well, helped us beat Indianapolis that first game. And then, you know, where Lito, you know, struggled in that game. And then, you know, when Lito went in, they, you know, it didn't take long, let's just put it that way. But nothing against Lito. It's just that sometimes matchups are, you know, for whatever reason, guys match up better against other people. Like, you know, Lito had a great game against Lee Evans, and Lee Evans is a great receiver. Then there's maybe somebody that might not be maybe thought of quite, you know, but for whatever reason, size, speed, whatever, maybe the matchups aren't quite as good. So each week we try to look at those matchups. We thought we had a good matchup with Strickland, and then unfortunately he pops a groin, and it's almost from that point on that, you know, our confidence went down a little bit on defense. We tried everything. It just, you know, you got to give credit to Peyton Manning.
Jets coach Rex Ryan, our guest here on the Michael K. Show. Another blow, I thought, for you your team. The Strickland one was big, but this one I thought was huge, and that was the injury to Sean Green, because your two-headed monster was so important during the postseason, and then you don't have him. When it happened, did you say to yourself, uh-oh?
I never really knew the extent of it. I knew that he had taken a shot in the ribs, and you know, and I just looked at him and they're like, well, he may have broken ribs. I'm like, hey, go take a needle and let's go, you know. And he went in there and he took it. It just sometimes it takes a little bit of, you know, it takes like 20 minutes. Unfortunately, we didn't have that time. You know, he was trying to come back, and doctors are like, no way, Rex. And you know, it was a big loss. I really think, though, the Strickland thing was even bigger. You know, it just felt that way. But, you know, because, I mean, TJ's an excellent back. But, I, you know, Sean really is a different guy. He's more your Larry Zonka type. And when he went out, you know, he was – the thing about Sean is he was dishing out some punishment, but he did receive it right in the ribs. And Anthony Lynn's already been talking to him about, you know, I guess there's some new rib pads that they're making, and because with Sean's style of play, the way he runs through tackles, he's going to get opportunities to get hit by a bunch of guys, and we've got to be able to protect them.
Bart Scott was not healthy. Is this something that took you by surprise as the game started, or did you guys just try to keep that hidden all week?
I don't want to say we hit anything.
That cost you money.
For obvious reasons. But, you know, I wanted to say, I really thought Bart's ankle would come around. I saw him in the pregame. I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, he is so tough. Bart is so tough, and he's so competitive. But I want, you know, I mean, he's out there on one leg, and he's competing, he's doing all that, and it's like, golly, he's got such a warrior mentality, you know. But he really wasn't really ready to go.
Now, your defense, right at the beginning, you get to Peyton quickly, boom, twice.
Right.
And you think to yourself, wow, they're really going to punish him. Did they change something? Because all of a sudden, or he got the ball away quickly. How did you guys not get to him after that?
Well, they ended up going to three receivers when we had the injury to Strickland, and our matchups kind of went out the window a little bit.
Right.
And I think that was more to do with it than anything else. We did try to pressure. We hit him a couple times. He got, like, I tell you, this was our kind of day. You know, we miss a couple of field goals, which doesn't happen. They run a screen pass. They see us in a blitz. They run a screen pass. Jim Leonard does a great job. Fights through. Going to make the tackle. He's playing with one thumb. So he kind of, the guy slides off of him. Sean Ellis comes running over there. He's got that club. It's like, are you kidding me? We get two shots at this guy, and we got both guys in cast, you know. But it's just one of those things. It wasn't our day, and it's as hard as me, you know. And again, it clearly was Indies. I mean, they outplayed us. They won the game, and, you know, no excuses and all that. But, man, just it was so frustrating. And this is 2 years in a row that I've coached a team that's, you know, that's gone to the AFC Championship only to lose. And whew, I can tell you this, it doesn't get any, you know, it never gets easier, that's for sure. And but I told our guys, I really think, you know, we have a team that we can be proud of. I mean, we came in this first year, we wanted to establish an identity. I think we did that. I think we're a team that nobody wants to play. We're physical. We can run the football. You know, we can play defense, and we're going to win a lot of games. I think we also saw yesterday that, you know, how important it is to, you know, to take care of your deal during the season. You know, if we could have played that game at home, would it have been different? I think it probably would have been playing in front of our fans. You know, the way our fans got up for that Cincinnati game, I don't know if anybody could have beat us that day.
Now let's talk about, you know, how about the positive. I thought your quarterback was outstanding. I thought he played his best game on his biggest stage in the biggest game of his life. More importantly, what did you think of Mark Sanchez?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, he absolutely did. And when you look at him, and this guy's grown up, there is no doubt. He knows how you win games. He knows how you lose games. And that's the thing, you know, protecting the football. I mean, the way he had two hands on the, you know, he saw this big end coming off the edge. He puts two hands on the football, brings it to his front shoulder, slides up inside to get rid of the ball, takes a huge shot and throws a touchdown pass to Dustin Keller. I mean, he can make all the throws. He's competitive as it gets. gets, and now this is his, you know, this is his offense. And do I see us being more of a, you know, a more balanced offense? I absolutely do in the future.
52-yard field goal in the second quarter. That's the one thing that people keep asking about. So let me ask you, you think about punting now in retrospect. Was that something that you felt good about with the Philly 52-yard try?
Well, I obviously wish it was a little closer, but at that stage, you know, that time of the game, I knew our situation. That, you know, I honestly thought that we were going to have to score, and that, you know, Feely, I have a lot of confidence. You're kicking in ideal situations. You can't get, you know, better situation, better, you know, better conditions to kick. And Feely had been busting 60-some yard kicks in warm-ups. So it was like, you know, we felt good about it, and it just missed the kick. But against Indianapolis, you've got to score. Obviously, you got to put points up any way you can. And I just thought that we had a good shot of making the kick, and clear, you know, now obviously I would have said, oh yeah, let's go ahead and punt it. But at that time, there was no hesitation whatsoever. I wanted to go with the field goal, and you know, unfortunately we never made it, and it shortened the field up, you know, obviously for Peyton Manning. But you know, whether it was 80 or 60 yards, that guy was on fire at that point.
All right, Braylon Edwards gets a big touchdown catch, and then after the game, he kind of questions the play calling, why you didn't go back to him. Now, my personal opinion, Rex, that's not the time to do it after you guys lose in the AFC Championship game. I'm a little disappointed in him. What's your take on this?
Well, you know, sometimes I know he's already said, well, God, that never came out the way I wanted it to come out. But, you know, and those things happen, and the emotions and whatever. But you're exactly right. You know, I don't think I need to be piled on right now. Obviously, Braylon's a great talent, and there was, you know, he was frustrated. He just wants to win, and he thought he could help us win, and really he did. I mean, I know everybody in New York was sitting back going, catch it, Braylon, catch it, you know, but he did, and I thought he was going to have a huge game. I really did, and he made a couple of great grabs for us, and then we tried to target him some other throws, but they were doubling him, and it's just, you know, sometimes hard to get the ball to a guy, you know, on defense. You can, you know, for instance, you can take a Reggie Wayne away, but you got to be able to cover the other parts as well.
Now, you probably didn't hear this when it happened. You probably heard of it. When you guys are in your locker room and the culture on the field, they're being interviewed by Jim Nantz. Peyton Manning said something unusual for him. He said, hey, we just kept our mouth shut all week and did our job, alluding to the fact that you guys talked a lot, which I don't think you did. What's your reaction to what Peyton said?
that's fine. You know, what are you going to do? We're going to be who we are, and you know, hey, it's too bad we couldn't rattle him more, you know. But he's clearly, you know, I got nothing but positive things to say about Peyton. And, you know, we open ourselves up to that, you know, obviously. And if somebody, you know, somebody beats you, then they can say what they want. But again, with us, everything we talk about is how, you know, we're positive about our football team. We believe in our team. And if that offends people, then so be it. But I know one thing. We go into every game expecting a win, just like we went into that game expecting to win. And sometimes, you know, you set yourself up for this. But it is what it is. You know, they one of their linebackers were talking before the game and things like that. But, you know, and he probably had about as much to do with winning that game as I did on the other sideline. You know, not much. But you know, with Peyton Manning, you know, okay, you know, we got you. You know, we hear you.
Now, Kerry Rhodes has been on our show before, and the last time he was on, I said, well, you know, you'd said earlier that you might not want to be back. Do you want to be back? You said, well, I don't want to get into that now, which I found kind of strange. Now, you two had a conversation today. Do you think Kerry's going to be back?
You know what? This is a, you know, I prefer to keep our conversations, you know, private. We've had a conversation about 8 weeks ago, and we have one today, and I'm just going to leave that between Kerry and I. If he chooses to speak about something, then that's his decision. But again, when I say it's going to be personal, then I mean it will be personal.
How about Braylon, Coach? A couple minutes ago, you were saying that, oh, it's a shame that Braylon wasn't in camp. It took a while for him and Sanchez to get on the same page, and you sort of intimated that that might be an opportunity. What's the likelihood you think he'll he'll stay with the team?
No, 100%. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He will be with us.
That's a good likelihood.
Yeah. Now, what? Somebody will offer us, Peyton Manning or something.
Him? Do you see it being just sort of a short term, or do you get the impression that Mike Tannenbaum and Woody Johnson would like to sign him to a long-term deal?
Well, I think we'd like to have the nucleus of our football team here a long time. You know, we think we're set up. We're a pretty young football team, and I think we can do some damage for a lot of years to come. So, but there's never any guarantees. I mean, if Braylon would sign for $1 million a year, then we'd jump all over it. But Braylon's not going to do that, you know. So there's always things that, you know, that come up and in the negotiating and things like that. I believe Braylon wants to be here, and I know we want Braylon here.
What would you identify, and I know you got to think about it a little bit, but I'm sure you have an idea, but what would you identify as the biggest need for next season?
Well, it depends on what opponent we play. I mean, if we play Indianapolis, you're thinking we need a corner or a pass rusher. You know, I mean, those are things that jump out. But really, you got to look at the big picture and do what's best in for your team. And, most of the time that ends up taking the best player. I think if you stick to that formula and you take the best player that's out there, then you're usually going to do well on draft day. But again, Mike Tannenbaum makes the final decisions, you know, on all the, on our draft and things like that, and he does a great job of it. So, you know, if he can get another David Harris out there, great. If he can find another Darrell Revis or a DeBrickashaw Ferguson, we'll sign up for that right now.
I'm wondering, Rex, you waited so long for this opportunity, and not only did you get it in New York, but you grabbed it by the throat, made it your own. Your team was in the AFC Championship game in your first year. Do you give yourself, in the disappointment of today, a chance to sit back in your office and be proud of yourself?
It's not as much me being proud of myself. I'm proud of this football team. I mean, and I told them, I said, look, I'm going to wear Jet stuff the rest of the year. You know, there's no question about it. Now, for two reasons. You know, first one is that I am proud to be a Jet. The next one is because it's 4XL. But those are the reasons. But you know what? I am proud to be a Jet. And our football team's proud to be Jets. And just like we're sending guys to the Pro Bowl, it's like, hey, you represent us. Outwork them. Show them what the Jets are all about. And that's what we want, you know. And stand up for your teammates, you know, and all that, because, you know, we are a team. And I want, one of the things that I said when I got here, I want every football player and, you know, every player in the National Football League to want to be a New York Jet. And I want every coach to want to coach for the Jets. And so those are things that it's important to me, that we do things the right way, and we have a team that people want to come in and you know, from the players that we have, from the style that we play, and have a fan base that every player wants to come here. And I think we're well on our way to do that.
Rex, can I go back to the game for just a second? I wanted to ask you a little more about Dwight Lowry. He's gotten a lot of heat because Garcon had a great day. But I'm curious, have you had a chance to look at the film yet?
Yes, I've watched the tape, unfortunately.
Okay. I guess my question is, in my mind, I thought some of those balls were so well thrown that even if you put Darrell Revis on Garcon, he was going to get it. And I'm just wondering what your take was on Lowry's individual performance, whether it was him not getting the job done or Manning just doing a phenomenal job with ball placement.
Well, I think the Manning thing is number one, first and foremost, because Dwight did have great coverage on several of those. And you know, if Revis would have been covering, would they have still been complete? I don't know. But I'll say this. You're exactly right. He had some great coverage, but the one thing you can't defend in this league is the perfectly thrown ball. And hey, I can't tell you how many times he fed it in there. And you know, you just kind of look and like, wow, you know, did I just see him? Did he just make that throw? You know, and That's him. There's only, you know, it happened twice to us this year. You know, once with Peyton Manning, and then Brady had a couple of throws like that as well against us.
And I was also wondering, now that you've had the chance to look at it, if you were coaching this game a year down the road, 2 years down the road, with a little more head coaching experience under your belt, is there anything you identify when you watch the film where you said, man, I would do that differently if I had another chance?
Well, I'm going to say this. If there was, I certainly am not going to say it.
Because, oh, come on. It'll be just between the two of us.
That's it. But, you know, they're obvious, you know, you always go back and you know, you got to live with it. You know, I'm always the toughest critic of myself. And, you know, I look at it as my responsibility to put our team in the best situation to be successful. That's what it should be. But man, it's, you know, sometimes you just get beat, and that's what it felt like.
Will you watch the Super Bowl?
Nah. Nope.
Rex,
I mean, it's funny because it just, you know, it's too painful to watch.
I got to tell you, I want to thank you, first of all. You've been so great with us. Win, lose, or draw, you come on, and you're honest with us, and we love the fact that you're on every Monday with us at 5 o'clock. And congratulations. I know it's tough today on a really great first year, and I know the Jets are in pretty good hands. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, guys.
Ready to take with you anywhere. It's the Michael K. Show Podcast.
Some consider him the best player on the offensive side of the ball of the New York Jets. A couple of coaches have been quoted as saying that. He's their all-pro center, Nick Mangold. Nice enough to join us the day after. Nick, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm all right. Your thoughts today? Well, I mean, you've had a little bit of time to think about it. Your thoughts on yesterday's game and the fact that you guys missed out on going to the Super Bowl?
You know, it's so disappointing. When you look around and you see the guys that we have in the locker room, and you want success, you know, not only for the team and for the organization, but when you're playing for guys in the team, you know, it's heartbreaking.
Take me inside that locker room after the game before the media was let in. What was Rex's speech like to you guys?
You know, it was obviously everyone was disappointed and crushed, and Rex, I think, said it best. You know, we had some great things this year. Obviously, we didn't finish out how we wanted to, but you know, the core of this team are tough, physical guys who love playing the game, and you know, we got a good start to the new year, and let's move forward.
You know, I look at this game, Nick, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and I say, you know, the Jets, you know, can't beat themselves up over anything, because I don't think that you guys did anything terribly wrong yesterday, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way. I think you just got beaten by a better team and a great quarterback. So I would think that would allow you guys to sleep a little easier, because, you know, it wasn't like you left the ball on the carpet or anything like that, or a big interception. There was nothing that you could put your finger on, and you just got beaten by a better team, I thought. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, you know, I think as we look at it, you know, I think we could have done more in the running game. I don't think we executed as well as we should have to allow, you know, to keep Peyton off the field. It was one of our goals going into the game. Is, you know, Peyton is a great quarterback, and you know, one of the best ways to defeat him is not let him on the field. And you know, we sputtered out there in the red zone a couple of times and weren't able to continue drives. And you know, that's something, you know, it's tough to deal with, because, you know, when we were up 17-6, you know, that's supposed to be our time to shine, and unfortunately we didn't get the job done.
Now, maybe you're being a little hard on yourself, but I think that when you lost Sean Green to the rib injury, I mean, that was a major blow, and I think that Thomas is giving you all that he's gotten, but I think that, you know, he's probably worn down and his knee's probably still hurting him. How big was the injury to Sean Green?
You know, I think it ultimately was pretty big. You know, we really enjoy the 1-2 punch that Thomas and Sean give us, and we've been riding Sean, you know, the past two games pretty hard. And it's disappointing to have somebody get injured in a game like that, especially when you're really counting on them.
Talk to me about Mark Sanchez, because I watched him, Nick, and I said, wow, this guy did everything. I thought he played a great game in the biggest game of his life. You're the guy snapping him the ball. Have you seen him be better this year?
You know, I think he did fantastic for us. You know, I think that just shows, you know, where he can go with the quarterback position. He's done a fantastic job, you know, since about the middle of the season when he was, you know, having a couple of troubles. He learned from those mistakes, and he played some fantastic ball down through the stretch.
Did he have more of an aura about him in the huddle, or was he like that from the very beginning? Because, you know, just watching the TV yesterday, he seemed like he was totally in control, that there wasn't any nervousness about him at all.
Yeah, you know, he has, from the moment he showed up, he hasn't had any nerves, which is pretty impressive, you know, in my eyes. He's got that confidence, that aura of being a starting quarterback, and, you know, when you're sitting in the huddle and times are rough, you know, you like being able to see that come out of your guy that's leading you.
Now, on the other side, and I know you're on the sidelines during this time, I mean, are you amazed by what Peyton Manning can do? Because I think that that's the difference in the game right there. Peyton Manning just seemed like he could do whatever he wanted to do.
It is amazing to watch Peyton work. They have a ton of weapons that he can go to, and he knows how to find them. And when you watch him play, it's kind of, you know, awe-inspiring as you sit there and watch him do the things that he does, which I don't think there's a quarterback in the league that can do that.
Will you be able to watch the Super Bowl, or is that something that you're going to avoid because, hey, we could be there?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet. You know, a part of me wants to watch it, and, you know, we played both teams. So, you know, I know what they're getting themselves into. But at the same time, you know, being so close, I might just say, you know, screw it, and I'm going to let this one pass.
Talk with Nick Mangold of the Jets here on the Jets Player Spotlight on the Michael Kay Show, 1050 ESPN New York. After the game, one of your teammates, Braylon Edwards, said he felt that the ball wasn't thrown to him as much as it should have been. You know, he had that big catch, the big touchdown catch. And I take exception to that, Nick, I think, because after that game, you know what, that's not the time to make that criticism. What's your take on that? Were you surprised that he said it?
You know, I think it shows, you know, his competitiveness. I would venture a guess that every one of our, you know, quote-unquote skill players, because I think the offensive line should be included in that, but unfortunately never gets done, would always want the ball, you know, every play. You know, and I think when you lose a game and when you lose it the way that we did, you know, I think that frustration comes out.
Now, how about the fact that now we move forward, and everybody says, well, you never know if you're going to get here again, but as best as I could tell, Nick, this is a team that's set up for the future. I mean, you have all the components. You hopefully get back Chris Jenkins. You hopefully get back Leon Washington. This is a team that could be set up for a long time. Do you guys feel that way? Do you feel that way as well?
Oh, definitely. There's a great feeling of potential, even though potential is a very scary word, because it could go either way. You know, when you look at this team, when you look at the guys, not only on the talent side, but the people that we have in that locker room, I see a very bright future, and I'm excited about the opportunity of, you know, getting a little break, but then, you know, starting right back up to see what we can do.
Nick, I think your offensive line probably feels pretty fortunate, as does the Giants line, when you think about it, that you've essentially spent 2 years starting together. And when you take into consideration that Damian just finished his 11th season, Fanica his 12th, do you start to wonder, gosh, how much longer are we going to have this unit together? Because two of the five guys on your line aren't really spring chickens.
Yeah, those 70 babies, you know, have some issues with the age thing.
Hey, careful. I'm a 70s baby too there, pal.
Well, I'm an 80s baby, and you know, we're up and coming. But, you know, when you see the guys, you know, when you see them out there and the way that they work, the way that they handle their bodies and make sure that they're doing all the right things, you know, I could venture a guess that they're both going to play for another 5 years and have that opportunity. opportunity, because they're very disciplined in how they take care of themselves and, you know, their love of the game. You know, I think they love being in that room, you know, as much as anybody. And, you know, I don't see them going anywhere for a long while.
Rex Ryan obviously, you know, boldly said that your team should be the favorite to go to the Super Bowl. And then you guys are in the locker room at this point. But on the field, Peyton Manning was talking to Jim Nance being interviewed. And he said, you know, at least we kept our mouth shut all week and just did our work. Do you think that you guys talked a lot? Because I don't. I thought that Rex was the only one that talked. And were you surprised that Peyton said that?
Yeah, you know, I guess this, people get into, you know, who said what, and he said this, and this guy said another thing. You know, I think some people take Rex rubs them the wrong way, and, you know, he's talking about his team and the passion that he has for his team. And, you know, I appreciate it as a player, and to have, you know, to have Peyton say something like that after the game is kind of disappointing.
Nick, we've talked on the show about something that I would consider an intangible, in that win, lose, or draw, you have a coach who tells you that beyond a shadow of a doubt, you are one of the best teams in the NFL. How much do you think that played into this team's overall success this year?
You know, I think it was a big help. You know, his confidence and his passion just kind of spreads like a wildfire throughout the locker room. And, you know, when you have guys believing that they're going to go out there and that they're going to win every time, I think it helps out, you know, a ton as you're going through each game. And, you know, he said from the beginning that we're going to go out there and we're going to be the toughest, most physical team in the league. And I think we got that job done this year.
Is there a particular pre-game, post-game, halftime speech that is front and center in your mind that was maybe something that was really powerful or emotional that you'll take with you?
You know, his Saturday night speeches were fantastic, and I don't know if one sticks out more than the other, but he always brought his A game on Saturday night, and you know, it's that passion that he has, and I think you know, the team responded very well to it.
Now, is it yelling? I mean, is he moving his arms a lot? What's those Saturday speeches like? Does he get emotional?
You know, he does it all. Other than, you know, maybe a little jig, he you know, he gets a little yelling. There, every once in a while, there might be some cursing, and you can tell how fired up he is. And you kind of feel bad for the guy because you know, looking at him, he wants to be right out there on the field with us. And you know, that kind of pride and passion that he has for this team is, I think, a huge help to the New York Jets.
Hey, Nick, we congratulate you on a great season, and you specifically had a tremendous year as well, and thank you for always being so accessible to us. And sorry about the loss yesterday, but I thank you for popping on today.
Hey, I appreciate you all having me on.
You're in the middle of the Michael K. Show podcast.
Time for the Eli Manning Report, powered by New York Community Bank. Season's greetings from the NYCB family of banks to your family by Panasonic Ideas for Life. And New Jersey Lottery, dream big with New Jersey's Mega Millions. With jackpots that start at $12 million and can grow up to $500 million, it's the biggest jackpot game in the country. With drawings twice a week, play Mega Millions from the New Jersey Lottery and give your dreams a chance. And Eli Manning, quarterback of the Giants, joins us now. Now, Eli, first off, okay, when you went to the Super Bowl, I called Peyton Manning your brother, so I hope you don't take that in a negative way.
No offense. He's the one in the Super Bowl, so you can refer to him. refer to me as that for right now, for this these next 2 weeks, I guess.
You know what I'm going to call you from now on? I'm going to call you Cooper Manning's little
there
brother.
There you go. That's really, I've been called that also, Cooper's little brother. That's really, when I went to Ole Miss, Cooper was the social hero and the most famous Manning at Ole Miss. I thought my dad was the most famous one, but Cooper was really the one. So for the 5 years I was
I was at Ole Miss. That's really what I was referred to.
Well, you and Cooper and Archie and your mom, I mean, you have to be awfully proud of what your brother did yesterday, because I was sitting in front of the TV screen. I know you were there live. And I'm just in awe of what this guy can do. It seems like he's at a different level than other people. Now, you play the position. You've played it to a Super Bowl. What do you think of what he does?
Yeah, I mean, he really played outstanding, and especially the second half. I kind of saw the Colts, and I think, you know, talking to him afterwards, they just, you know, they stayed in one personnel. They kind of stayed in that three-wise personnel, and he got up there and just saw what the Jets were doing. They were playing a lot of man-to-man, especially in the second half, and so he was just throwing the ball every time. They had seven guys in the box, and he was hitting receivers, he was hitting Dallas, and, you know, offensive line did a good job protecting him in the second half, and, you know, he just had great control. Like, he was calling the plays, and, you know, he's got a good feel for what's going on, and I think that simplified what the Jets were doing. They were kind of tipping their hand a little bit, and when you can just get in one kind of almost one formation or one personnel, you know, they can only do so many different blitzes out of it, and they really, you know, got a good feel. I think he got a good feel of what they were doing, what their looks were. He could see the blitz, he could see the coverage, and just got the Colts into the best play possible. And they ran the ball pretty well early on, which was nice. They haven't done that in a while, the Colts. And he just he was accurate. Receivers were getting open, making some tough catches, and you know, they did a really great job in the second half.
You know, all these things you're saying that he noticed, and you know, they were in certain packages that he identified. This isn't against some podunk defense. This is number one defense in the NFL. Why was he able to get 30 points off them? Is he just, I know that you're one of the other 32 starting quarterback. I mean, is he just smarter than everybody else? I mean, does he see things that other people don't see?
Well, I think he prepares. You know, he's played against that defensive style before. You know, he's played against the Baltimores for a long time. He told me he went back and looked a lot at the 05 Colts Baltimore game where he thought they had good corners, kind of like the Jets do. They didn't mind playing a lot of man-to-man coverage, kind of single high man and then two man. So that was kind of what he thought they were going to get, and sure enough, they kind of did a lot of those similar things. So I think he just, you know, when especially in the second half, when he got into one kind of one personnel group, you know, three wide and one tight end, one running back, he didn't change a whole lot of the, you know, maybe switch the strength of the formation. But, you know, then you can kind of see, you know, what they're doing, what's their blitz, you know, how are they lining up when they're faking the blitz. So then you can really kind of get an idea of what exactly they're doing. Where if you start changing personnel, changing formations a lot, they can, you know, every time you're in a different formation, it might be a new look, new disguise, and it takes a little longer to identify exactly what they're doing. Where the second half, the Colts simplified what they were doing almost, and so therefore it simplified what the Jets could do in their looks. And and it's one of those deals where, as a quarterback, if you know exactly what they're doing, you have a good plan. You're not sitting there looking for guys to get open. The first guys getting open a lot, then that makes your job easy. And I thought, for the most part, kind of in the Colts, the first guy was getting open a lot. They're throwing those little short underneath routes, crossing routes. You know, they were just hit a few go routes. They hit a punt. You know, they run that short end route a few times to Grossall. I hadn't really mastered his name yet. And then they hit him on a pump. Just doing. It's not. You know, what they do, and that's the amazing thing watching the Colts, it's not overly complicated stuff. They just, you know, receivers run very good routes. They get open, and then Peyton, he's throwing it on time. He knows exactly where those guys are going to be, and it's just precision. And it's just guys, you know, being at the right spot, guys doing the right things to get open, and Peyton not kind of fooling around, you know, looking to see if this guy might get open, and, you know, waiting on guys to get open. He's just going through his reads quickly. He gets the ball out fast, and they're very effective.
Well, that they certainly are, and I'm just sitting back and I'm saying to myself, every quarterback that's watching this guy must say, well, I want to do it like that. Now, we had Steve Young on earlier, and he said that Peyton once told him a story that with Austin Colley, during the offseason, he worked 8 hours one day just running three routes, trying to learn three routes and the different permutations of it. I mean, do quarterbacks do that? Is he just one of the few people that would spend 8 hours with one guy?
I mean, if he said they worked 8 hours, I guess they worked 8 hours. That sounds, you know, maybe he did. I've never heard. That's a long day of running the three routes for 8 hours.
Also, you might hurt your arm throwing that many passes.
Yeah, I think the story might be embellished already. So, you know, rumors could do that. But no, that is Peyton's been doing that since college, and that's kind of something he taught me, and I've tried to, you know, do also. Is you just, you know, it's not about going out there and having, you know, 12 guys and you throw, you run 20 different routes and you throw each one twice. Yeah, I mean, you got a good workout, but did you really get better? Did you really, you know, get the timing down of each route? And so I think that's, you know, what he does is, you know, they think, hey, let's run a hitch, let's run a curl, let's run a comeback, and let's kind of make all three of those look exactly the same. Your stem, your look, and so, you know, and we'll work those three routes, and we'll get perfect at them. So, you know, we're not even thinking about it. I know exactly when you're going to make your break. Let's do it versus, you know, man coverage, press. Let's do it versus off coverage, and you just rep it. And so, you know, when the game comes, you're not thinking about, hey, when's he going to come out of his break? You know, what's that little move? You know exactly what your guy is doing, and so you're throwing it before he comes out of the break, and you just have great confidence. And you're not sitting there kind of thinking and waiting. You know exactly where the ball needs to be thrown, where the guy's going to be, and you know, you're just, it's just kind of it's like mentally ingrained. It's just physically ingrained also, where you know exactly how to throw it.
How impressed were you with Sanchez?
I thought Sanchez played well. You know, he had the big throw, you know, early on, and for the touchdown. So, you know, and he had the other touchdown throw. It's, you know, taking a big hit on a third and eight. You know, third and eight from the eight's not an easy spot. That's not an easy, you know, place to get a touchdown. They know you got to throw, and it's tight territory. So I thought, you know, the Jets do a good job not putting them in, you know, situations. You know, early on in the game, they had two third and long situations, third and 12, and they ran the ball. You know, say, hey, we're not going to, you know, they know Freeney and those defensive ends, they're going to be getting back there fast in those situations, and they said, we're not going to put him in a situation where, you know, where he can make a mistake. And so I thought he played well, and you know, did everything he could do, and you know, he got better off, you know, throughout the whole season, like you kind of knew he would.
Now, did you get a chance to watch the end of the NFC game?
Yeah.
All right, now, we as fans, we sit back and go, well, how did he make that throw? So let me ask you, because you've been there, you've done that, why would Favre make that throw? Why would he throw that ball across the field, across his body?
You know, it's one of the hardest things, you know, it's one of the things they tell you not to do, never do it, and you're in a game, and, you know, you see that guy, you see a guy open, and you're kind of rolling right, and you want to get some yards or get yourself in field goal range, and it's just tempting. It's just kind of that temptation, just kind of like, hey, there's a guy in the middle of the field wide open, and you just, that's the guy you never see. You never see the guy who's back to the left of him, even far, further across the field. You can just never get your eyes to that guy. And you know, it's just, you know, Favre's kind of made a living out of making those throws and making tight throws and believing in his arm, and you know, every once in a while it comes to hurt him. He, you know, most of the time he gets away with it, and he you know, makes, that's how he makes some of those outstanding plays that he's done all over his career. But you know, it was just tough. You know, I just thought, you know, they're on the 32-yard line or so, and they all of a sudden get real conservative, thinking, you know, 49-yard field goal is like a chip shot. I just thought they threw the ball all the way down there. I know you don't want to get a sack in that situation, but, you know, they started running it, and they got nothing on first and second down, and then they get the penalty was a killer, the 12-minute in the huddle, just a killer. So now you're out of field goal range, or you just got a really long one, and so they have to throw it. They really, I think, ran a play just to kind of get 5 or 6 yards, and nothing was really open. He scrambled, and he kind of went to a guy, I think just a clear out. He just kind of cleared things out, and, you know, not even expecting the ball, but he just kind of saw Favre rolling out and stopped. And you know, that's just one of those things. It's just tempting, and it's hard to – you always got to make yourself say, hey, all right, don't throw it, you know, back over there. Just don't do it, even though you see the guy, you think you can get it in, and, you know, sometimes just that thought doesn't enter the mind fast enough, and you make the throw.
I'm fascinated to know how the mind of a quarterback watching the game works, because Steve Young said that when he started to throw the ball, he screamed at the TV, no. I mean,
no,
were you thinking
– the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you knew that it was going to happen.
But you know what? I've done that with Favre so many times. It's like, you know, and he gets away with it. But it happens a few times. Anytime I see a quarterback throw across his body, right away I say no. And anytime a ball's tipped up in the air, I say no. But a good chance both are going to be, you know, an interception.
For somebody who's played through his fair share of pain, what was your reaction when Favre took that high-low hit from Adele and McCray, and you obviously saw something was going on with the ankle?
Yeah, I mean, you just, you just know, you know, you're going to take those hits. And, I saw him walk off on his own, and I knew he'd come back out there and be out there. You know, he's a tough guy. There's a reason he's played 296 straight games or whatever it is. You know, he wants to be out there, and I knew he was going to be able to come back. But yeah, that hits, you know, that's just one of those parts playing quarterback. You're going to take some awkward hits sometimes, so I was happy he was able to get up and finish the game.
Despite the Minnesota loss, Vasante Shenko had a nice game. He's had a great season, and this is a guy, when you played with him in the Giants, because he was backing up Shockey, honestly, I didn't even know he existed. As you see him, if you catch him on the highlights, what are your thoughts about how prominent he's become in the Vikings offense?
Yeah, I mean, even last season, end of last season, and all of this season, he's played great. And you know, Shango was kind of a guy who, he obviously backed up Shockey, but when he got in the games, Shockey was got banged up or different situation, he was a guy who can make some plays. Just catching the ball is athletic, and you've seen that all season. He's someone Favre looks to, especially in the red zone. Has a bunch of touchdowns, and so I've been happy for Shenko and the season he's had and the success he's had, because he is a guy who works hard and he's a good guy. He's a good guy around the locker room, good attitude, smiling a lot, and I'm happy for him.
In the AFC Championship game, there were a bunch of cutaways of you watching up in the box or whatever, and I found myself thinking, does Eli play that "what would I do on this play" game? Like, every time your brother's out there, do you find that you're actually on the same wavelength as Peyton more times than not?
Yeah, a little bit, and it's actually fun. You know, it's fun being at the game, because on the TV you can't always see everything. I mean, you can see kind of the end result, they're rushing five or they're doing this, but kind of from the, you know, I'm finally, you know, being up in the game, at a game, you can see exactly what the defense is doing. Hey, they're playing quarters right here. You know, I can see kind of Peyton, you know, checking or talking the line, and, you know, I can kind of say, all right, he's going to run it. He's going to run the ball right here. All right, you know, they got seven in the box. You know, what's the, they're 10 man. You know, they're trying to hit Dallas. You know, they got Dallas on a safety. That's what they're trying to work here. You know, so I can kind of, I've been watching that offense for so long. I can kind of guess, and being a quarterback, what he's going to do, run or pass, and I don't know. I always know the exact play or what they're doing, but I'm kind of back there or up there, kind of thinking like a quarterback, and I get more nervous. I mean, I never get nervous for one of my games. I guess, you know, kind of the beginning of that game, and up really until halftime, I was real nervous. After the Colts got went and scored right before halftime, I thought, you know, that 2-minute drive, they hit two big plays to Austin Collie, that kind of gave me a little relief. They finally moved the ball and got a touchdown, and so I guess I get nervous because I know I can't do anything. I'm not in the, I can't make a play. I can't, you know, do anything for him out there. And so I just, I just root for him hard. And if I'm not in that situation, I'm not playing that game. I'm hoping the best for him.
Now, when you're up in the box, I mean, what do we go with? We go chicken fingers, or you can't eat because you're so nervous?
I ate before the game, and I didn't eat or drink one thing after there. In the box, I'm just kind of watching and intently. I sat by my mom because she didn't talk a whole lot. She kind of watches, so a few people might try to come up and talk to me, but man, my focus is on the game. You don't get much of a conversation from me. I'm kind of talking to some. I might be talking to you, but I never take my eyes off the field and what's going on. So during halftime or during a timeout, I'll relax for a second and try and enjoy the company and people I'm with. But I'm just watching intently and just rooting hard for my brother.
You had the chance to play the Saints this year. How do you break down the Super Bowl?
Saints are very talented, and defensively they do what I call some junk. They have a lot of different looks, different blitzes, faking blitzes, and playing some different coverages you don't see every day. It's not like they're a team that says, hey, we're gonna play man-to-man coverage and see if you can beat us. They mix up their zones, they mix up their blitz looks, do some exotic things. So I know Peyton will do a great job of studying that up, and they'll have a good game plan for it. And then defensively, obviously the Saints, they have the talent of running back, throwing the ball to score a lot of points. And I thought Minnesota did a really good job getting pressure on Drew, and I think that's kind of what it'll come down to. If Freeney and those pass rush specialists can get to Drew, then the Colts should have a decent shot of containing that high-powered offense.
Now, I would assume, final thing, Eli, that blood is thicker than childhood team and conference affiliation. So you're going for the Colts.
Yeah, I got to go for my brother, and I root for. I mean, I'm a Saints. Grew up a Saints fan, and I still keep up with them. But kind of being in the NFC and having played them, I got to stick with brother here, and I'll be rooting hard for him.
Makes sense. We thank you for popping on. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, that's Eli Manning. The Eli Manning Report, powered by New York Community Bank. Season's greeting from the NYCB family of banks to your family. Panasonic Ideas for Life and New Jersey Lottery. Dream big with New Jersey's Mega Millions, with jackpots that start at $12 million and could go up to $500 million. It's the biggest jackpot game in the country, with drawings twice a week. Play Mega Millions from the New Jersey Lottery and give your dreams a chance. We'll revisit Brett Favre, whether or not he's going to retire or not. The NFC game. Want to talk more about the Jets? You know the number, 1-800-919-ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. And we have to sprinkle in some baseball as well, because there's some baseball news. We only have a half hour up to the Ranger pregame show, but right now it's time for SportsCenter and Bonnie Bernstein.
This has been the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.